In our first lesson, reincarnation, a part of God's plan for man, we were establishing the fact that this is a part of a master plan for man's unfolding. And if reincarnation is a part of a master plan, then it must have a purpose or a goal, because anything that divine intelligence creates is a movement with a direction and a definite and marvelous purpose. And we considered the possibility that reincarnation is to lead man out of his three-dimensional human consciousness into his fourth-dimensional Christ or cosmic consciousness. And at that point, man becomes the resurrected or the whole person who was promised from the beginning. Now, this Christ or cosmic identity is the goal of every human being upon the earth, whether they are aware of it or not. It is still their goal, a goal that was assigned to each one in their creation, in their formation. Reincarnation is the law of the human or earthly or three-dimensional person. And resurrection into the cosmic or Christ identity puts man under a new law, so that at that point, reincarnation is no longer necessary. You see, the whole idea is to get to the point where we do not need this lower law or this experience. And at that point, we are under new orders, so to speak, and we become a new being under the grace of God, a person with a divine nature, who has at his fingertips a wisdom and love that was beyond his experience a moment ago, and the capacity to feel, the power to perform far beyond his present conception. That's the purpose and the goal of reincarnation. Now, do you find it strange that most of the people, especially religious people, who accept life after death, do you find it strange that they violently reject the idea of life before birth? Isn't that rather peculiar when you think about it? Why should it be so hard to accept that if life can exist beyond this body, that it can also have existed prior to this body? If life is going to be resurrected again at any place in the universe, in a body, what is that but reincarnation? Is that not your life in another body, living out an experience? That's what reincarnation is. Reincarnation is not a statement that you have many lives. It is a statement that you are one life living itself eternally in many forms or opportunities of experience and of expression. Now, anything that can happen once can happen twice. Any mathematician will tell you that. Or it can happen many times over. In fact, what could be stranger or more startling than the fact that we live right now? Have you never ever looked at yourself in a mirror and had a moment of shock when you saw yourself standing there looking at yourself in the mirror and you thought, my gosh, what am I doing here? Is this really me? Of course you have. Now, if we live at all, we live forever. There's only one kind of life, and that is eternal life. Now, of course, we wish to remember for the purposes of this series of study that we are equating the word life with the word soul or spirit. You see, the body is not the life or the source of life as we have believed it to be. Your body is only the vehicle of expression of the soul or the spirit or the life of you. And death is not the opposite of life, nor is death the absence of life, except in the sense that the spirit has withdrawn itself from the body, and we look at the body and say that the body is dead. Well, the body never ever lived of itself. All that it was for a period of time was a vehicle of expression for the life that still lives, but has just vacated its former apartment. That's all. The complementary word should be birth and death, not life and death. You see, we have used and confused these words. Life is not dependent on the body. Body is dependent on life. And life is cause, body is effect. Now, when life is withdrawn from the body has nothing to sustain it and breaks up into its original atomic forms, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, the scriptures state. But nothing is lost, absolutely nothing. No identity is lost, or let me say, no real identity is lost. Life, or spirit, is eternal, and at our level, life is seeking to discover itself, to become aware of its own self, to become self-aware or self-conscious. And our primary purpose upon this earth is to lose our body identity. We have been so associated with our bodies and with forms outside ourselves that we have believed ourselves to be that body. And we never were, nor shall we ever be. And this identity must be lost so that we can become a part of the body of Christ, as the New Testament tells us, a part of that Christ consciousness, or to put on the whole armor of God. Now, our Judeo-Christian heritage has much to say about the soul re-entering this world in a body. And our class next week will be what the scriptures reveal about reincarnation, and I will be specifically speaking at that time about some of these statements. But first of all, the great word, or the good news, is in our New Testament and in the Old Testament that preceded it, and that Old Testament was the New Testament of Jesus Christ. The good news is that man is spirit or soul, and soul is eternal. And that's a pretty good start. That's a good place to start from. And man has not always known that about himself, and in some quarters today he still does not know that about himself, that he is an eternal expression and cannot die. In the funeral services that I perform, I usually use a prose poem by an unknown author called There Is No Death. And these services, those moments, are great and beautiful experiences for me. There is no tragedy in what we have called death. This is the experience of a spirit that still lives. Something that we need to get into our consciousness and work with, because we will be having this experience with other spirits, other souls, and with our own in the passage of time. I am standing upon the seashore. A ship at my side spreads her white sails to the morning breeze and starts for the blue ocean. She is an object of beauty and strength, and I stand and watch her until at length she hangs like a speck of white cloud just where the sea and sky come together to mingle with each other. Then someone at my side says, "There, she's gone." "Gone where?" "Gone from my sight. That's all. She is just as large in mast and hull and spar as she was when she left my side, and she is just as able to bear her load of living weight to her destined port. Her diminished size is in me, not in her. And just at the moment when someone at my side says, 'There, she's gone,' there are other eyes watching her coming, and other voices taking up the glad shout, 'There she comes.' And that is dying. There is no death." James Dillard Freeman wrote in an article called Another Dawn, "To understand the meaning of death, we must understand the meaning of life. Looking at life, we see that all things change. But although all things change, nothing perishes. Things only change. If this is true in the world of things, how much more true it is in the world of mind. Soul has a substance of its own, no less permanent for being immaterial, no less real for being invisible. We cannot measure it with calipers or weigh it in balance. We cannot feel it with our fingers or see it with our eyes, but it is there, substantial, real. It changes, but it will not perish. Life does not begin with birth. It does not end with death. Life is an eternal process, an eternal progress. This visible form, this audible voice, this aggregation of organs, this network of ideas, we are more than these. These are the trappings of visibility, and we are an expression of the spirit of life. Life is the work of a grand and kind intelligence and has an order and a meaning far beyond our power to see at this moment. But we can trust this intelligence that made the world. We were not made for dying or for failure or for pain. We are meant to live gloriously. We are the children of the infinite. We have a divine destiny, and we are advancing toward this destiny. Out of the infinite we came, and into the infinite we return. But we are upward bound. We have risen through an eternity of experiences. We shall go higher yet through other experiences. And that is reincarnation. Question: what happens when we die? Throughout all of the ages, there have been those men and women who stood tall and reached into that fourth dimension of understanding, who have known and who have told us in symbolic and actual words what happens when we die. And we have not heard it, but we can hear it now. We've been instructed concerning this laying aside of the earthly body. And the instruction reads in 1 Thessalonians, the 4th chapter, the 13th verse. We would not have you ignorant, brethren, concerning them that fall asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as the rest, who have no hope. It's a strange thing to me that in our Christian world that professes to believe in Christianity, that if you go to a funeral, there's much sorrowing, as though no one really believes that this person did not die. It's the most amazing thing. But there it is for the eye to behold and the ear to hear. There it is. And here we're told, we would not have you ignorant, brethren, concerning them that fall asleep, that you do not sorrow as they do who have no hope. In 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, the 44th and 49th verses, if there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. The first man is of the earth, earthy. The second man is of heaven. Does this sound like two people? This one and that one? No, this first man or this first person and the second one are both you. This first one that comes into this world is of the earth, earthy, your physical body. It is the natural you. But the second one is of the heaven. It is of the fourth dimension, of this Christ or cosmic self. And if we have borne the image of the earthly, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. The first one is born of our parents. The second one is born of our own consciousness, of our own awareness. And reincarnation is this process that gives us in time the consciousness to become aware and to ultimately participate in our rebirth. Except that ye are born again, ye shall not see the kingdom of God. And this rebirth is your own active participation with your own unfolding. Nature unaided fails. The universe cannot take us farther than it has brought us, except that we cooperate consciously and deliberately and intelligently and lovingly. Let not your heart be troubled. John, the 14th chapter, the first verse. Believe in God. Believe what I say to you, the master teacher said. In my Father's house are many mansions. Now, did you interpret this to mean that out there in the sky there are lots of large houses? In my Father's house are many mansions? No. In this marvelous the spiritual universe, there are many states of consciousness. Where we are, and beyond where we are is the next dimension. And beyond that, it is an eternal unfolding. If it were not so, I would have told you. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you in these matters. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Now, how does the world give? You see, we have suspected that maybe life was given to us to be taken away, like the world gives. Remember when you were a child and you were playing with your friend down the street, and your friend did not like the way you were playing and took the toy that he or she had given you and went running and screaming home? Remember how that was? Remember the time maybe when you were engaged to this beautiful man, and one day he decided that he did not like you so very much, and he actually took that ring right off your finger. Remember the reluctance that you felt in releasing it? That's the way the world gives. If you do not comply or shape up, it wants its little gifts and toys back. Now, my peace I leave with you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. No, no, no. You have been given this life, and in this life, you will find there all that the Father has. And it can never be taken away from you. That is your peace. You cannot die. Question, is there any scientific proof that we live after death? Answer, it depends on what you mean by proof. There was a time in my thinking when if I had seen Lazarus brought forth, I would have been looking back behind for the gimmick in the background. That would not have proven it to me. It can be proven to us from within. But there is some scientific validation that life and personal identity extend beyond the body experience. And it's some of the best work has been done by Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a psychiatrist who is internationally known and accepted. And her reports of the experiences of dying patients are well-grounded and sound and supportable. These reports initially astonished her because, as a psychiatrist, she was working with the dying and their families, helping them to peacefully accept this terminal experience, she thought. And in time, she found out that it was not terminal at all, because so many of the patients that died didn't stay dead, and they came back and reported that even when they were dead, they weren't dead. Now, that shocked her pretty good, and she began to explore hundreds of patients, and in 1969 published this book on death and dying, and has since received international attention as the result of her work. Now, there is a more recent book written by a physician, a psychiatrist, Dr. Raymond A. Moody, and Dr. Moody decided to become a psychiatrist in order to teach the philosophy of medicine in a medical school. And as a part of his education, he studied the phenomena of survival of bodily death. And he was shocked and astonished in the very same way that Dr. Kubler-Ross was. And he was also unaware that similar research was being conducted elsewhere at the same time. And he and Dr. Kubler-Ross did not meet until February 1976. And at that time, Dr. Moody discovered that their research not only paralleled the processes, the systems that they were using were virtually identical, but their findings paralleled. Their reports were virtually the same. On the back cover of Life After Life, I would like to read to you what death is like. Would you like to know what the experience of dying is like? Would you like to hear it? I'll read you the report of a typical dying experience. A man is dying, and as he reaches the point of greatest physical distress, he hears himself pronounced dead by his doctor. He begins to hear an uncomfortable noise, a loud ringing or buzzing, and at the same time feels himself moving very rapidly through a long dark tunnel. And after this, he finds himself outside of his own physical body. Soon, other things begin to happen. Other people come to meet him and to help him. He glimpses the spirits of relatives and friends who have already died. And a loving, warm spirit of a kind he has never encountered before appears. A being of light who comforts and guides. That's a typical experience reported. Dr. Kuber Ross was in the city recently, and she told a newspaper reporter, and I quote, "Almost everyone fears death. Yet my research during the past 8 years with people who have been declared dead and have then come back indicates that death is usually an incredibly beautiful experience." I'll repeat that. Death is usually an incredibly beautiful experience. She is convinced that there is life after death. In hundreds of cases, people have described to her a serene, floating sensation as they left their physical bodies and an enhanced sensory input as they observed their own death scene. For example, people in traffic accidents have been able to recall license numbers of cars which drove by and didn't stop. A blind woman could see the colors of the outfits of all the people who were around her when she died. A blind woman. People who have died and come back say consistently that they have been met by someone who died before them. And always is the report of this presence of light and of love, the peace, the certainty, the informed certainty that they experience. Dr. Ross said that children who always want their mothers and fathers nearby when they die also say that they were met by someone who died before them. In one case, a girl was met by an older brother who died at birth and whom she had never met in real life. And almost without exception, there is a reluctance to return to the physical body that only a short time before the person feared leaving. Their experience out of the body is so beautiful and so free that they do not wish to return. And one of the most amazing experiences in the annals of Dr. Kubler-Ross, and I will show you the headline, "A Visitor from Beyond the Grave." And Dr. Kubler-Ross reluctantly discussed this on two occasions because she didn't wish people to think that she was goofy. And it happened at her office at the University of Chicago, where she was an associate professor of psychiatry. At the time, she was seriously considering giving up her research on death and dying. And suddenly one day, a woman appeared in the office and introduced herself as a patient who had died 10 months before. The visitor looked identical to the former patient, but Kubler-Ross says she refused to believe it, and she questioned this person extensively and received answers that apparently only that person would have known about conversations that they had had. And this patient said that she knew that I was considering giving up my work with dying patients, and she came to tell me not to give it up, that it was not the time. I reached out to touch her. I was reality testing. I was a scientist, a psychiatrist, and I didn't believe in such things, although it was happening to me right now. I told her a white lie and said that I wanted her to write a little note that I could give to her minister. The minister and I had helped this woman a lot. And she smiled in this all-knowing way, like she knew very well what my intentions were. And later, that handwriting was checked out by an expert who said that, yes, it was the writing of the deceased person. And Dr. Kubler-Ross has that note preserved under glass, she said. And if it had not come, if that experience had not come at that time, she would have given up her research. How many times have we read that we entertain angels unawares? I have a Reader's Digest story of October 1974 by Victor Salol, a filmmaker who heads his own company. And he died for 23 minutes. He was dead for 23 minutes. And his experience is parallel. Not long ago, I did the funeral service for a dear, dear friend of mine who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, living the spiritual life for many years. And about 12 years prior to her death, she had died and had been medically dead for about 3 hours before she came back into her body. And without having this information as a background, she told me the story that is identical to the description that I have given you. She saw what was happening and reluctantly came back through that long tunnel and into the body because she was informed by this presence of light that there was much work that she needed to do in her life while still upon the earth. In this last transition, it was caused by cancer. She had a painful form of cancer. And never have I seen a person who so sweetly and serenely moved forward into the experience of death. There was no suffering, although the pain was there. And she anticipated with great eagerness and joy not to escape life, because she was meeting her life daily and regularly and far more beautifully than most that we know. She died with great dignity and beauty. But she was moving into the known. For her, she had been there before and knew what she was stepping back into. Last year, I did a retreat in Texas, and a person who came to that retreat was agnostic and disturbed and upset and wondered what he was doing there. And a few short weeks later, he called me one day here, long distance. And that very day, he had been in his doctor's office. His doctor was a friend and gave him an injection of penicillin. He immediately went into anaphylactic shock and died medically. He went through the same tunnel experience and came out and found himself standing in the corner of the doctor's office watching his friend working over his body with his nurses there. And he could see everything in detail and could read and feel the thoughts and emotions of his friend the doctor, who was crying and sobbing inside himself because he had caused the death of his friend. And he wanted to say to him and cried out, but could not be heard, "I am not dead. I'm standing here in the corner. Can you not see me?" And he knew that they could not. And in that experience, he was informed of many things, of the presence of this light of God and of his eternal identity. And he knew that he must come back into this life to live it better for a time. And he called me that very afternoon, and you talk about a changed person. He was changed. And I have a long, long letter from him that followed. Question: where are we and what are we doing while we are dead? Of course, we can't die. Well, for every objective or visible level of the mind, there is a subjective or invisible equivalent of that state. In other words, we are here and we are visible, and so is everything around us. But there is an invisible vibration that is the equivalent of this. So that when we die, we do not go anywhere in the sense of real estate or time. We move into that vibration, but we do not move up. Dying does not take us higher up. There's no merit in dying. You do not advance any more than you advance if you go into another room. Step into that room, if you will, and you become visible to the rest of us, but you remain exactly as you were the moment before you stepped into that room, intact. Question: are we making progress while we are out of the body? If we've been making progress while we are in the body, we will continue making progress while we're out of the body. The dominant patterns in this life tend to remain. For example, I know that your spiritual progress is the most important thing in your life because you came here tonight rather than watching on television Dorothy Hamill John Denver and Barry Manilow, right? So obviously, you're turned on to your spiritual growth. Now, when you step out of the body, that tendency to grow and to improve yourself will remain. But suppose there is someone who is only drifting through life, suffering and enjoying it. So they die. Now, boy, you're talking about having a good time in that state with their suffering. They will do it because it is a subjective state, an enhanced state of consciousness, and the dominant traits of mind and of character and especially of feeling will be enhanced. Now, if you think you're suffering pretty good here, I would strongly urge us all to give it up because it only becomes more so there. The person is obsessed with material things or sexually obsessed. They'll go out into that life and continue pursuing that which they pursued, even though it's not available. You understand more about death than I thought you did. Suppose a person spends their time and energy and talent on the golf course. That's what they think about all the time. Well, they'll look for the nearest place to tee up. Our dominant tendencies remain. So it's very important that we establish in our minds a consciousness of spiritual growth. Question: does any personality or identity survive death? Answer: personality and identity are not really the same thing. Personality is the acquired identity of the human consciousness that cannot enter the kingdom of the heavens or the fourth dimension. Personality, for example, believes itself to be white or black or Catholic or Protestant or Jewish or atheist or 24 or 42 years old, rich or poor, brilliant or stupid. Personality has one sister and two brothers, grew up in Milwaukee, and will retire in Florida. Personality lives in time and space and is of this sense or three-dimensional consciousness, and we must die to this mortal or limited identity. The very thing that we cling to, we must die to. We die, we have to die, because we've not learned to die. Did you follow that? We must die or go through the experience of death because we have not learned to die daily as Paul said. You see, man believes that his identity is what he is here, and so he clings to that identity and has tried to create a heaven that he can take it to, and he can't because nobody wants it. Don't try to take that anywhere because it has no marketplace in the universe. We cannot get into the kingdom of the heavens with this limited human identity. And this is what Paul meant when he said that we must separate or die to our present self. He said, I die daily, meaning the personality, so that I might live. In the 8th chapter of Mark, the 35th verse, if you insist on saving your life, but think of life as personality or identity. If you insist on saving your personality or your identity, you will lose it. Only those who throw away their lives, their personality or identity, for my sake and for the sake of the good news, will ever know what it means to really live. The 9th chapter of Luke. Whoever loses his life or personality for my sake will save it. But whoever insists on keeping his life, whoever tries to cling to his present identity, will lose it. And what profit is there in gaining the whole world when it means forfeiting one's self? Question: how long do we stay out until we forget who we thought we were? What happens if we come back too soon? And I read to you from Reincarnation, an East-West anthology by Head and Cranston, under sections on religion, and in this instance, Judaism. A quotation from Sholem Osh. Not the power to remember, but its very opposite, the power to forget, is a necessary condition of our existence. If the lore of the transmigration or reincarnation of souls is a true one, then these, between their exchange of bodies, must pass through the sea of forgetfulness. According to the Jewish view, we make the transition under the overlordship of the angel of forgetfulness. But as sometimes happens, the angel of forgetfulness himself forgets to remove from our memories the records of the former world. And then our senses are haunted by fragmentary recollections of another life. They drift like torn clouds above the hills and valleys of the mind and weave themselves into the incidents of our current experience. Then the effect is exactly the same as when listening to a concert broadcast through the air, we suddenly hear a strange voice break in, carried from afar on another ether wave and charged with another melody. Unquote. This happened to me when I was a child on two occasions that were somewhat long-lasting. And the experiences of former lives were so real and concrete, so much more real than the one in which I was experiencing, that it was very, very confusing, especially since the life I was in was not pleasant, and these appeared to be, and I was homesick for that place, those places. That's what happens when we come back and still remember. Question, how are our parents chosen? Do we choose our parents, or does God? Answer, it's not so much that parents or personalities are chosen. Situations are selected. Infinite intelligence working through you selects the type of situation that has growth potential for you. This is not a conscious choice. It is more like we would think of a computer readout. Don't think of it as you sitting up on some cloud-like substance surrounded by beautiful colors, filled with a sudden surge of all-knowingness and a desire to return to the earth, looking down here and saying, gosh, I think I'll pick out that darling little couple to be my next parents. It's not like that. If it was like that, we would have chosen better the last time. Why did so many of us select situations that we struggled in and ran from and cursed? Well, you see, we do not get what we want. We get what we need for our growth experience. Don't think of it either as God saying, golly. Little Mary Sue there is a bright little spirit. And last time she was on the earth, she did so well. And since she's been here, she has been hovering around my feet. And I think I will reward her with an easy trip this time and with a delightful, well-educated set of parents, so that when she grows up, it will be finishing school and a trip to Europe every year. No, it's not like that. Our karmic patterns are really computerized, and we draw situations that will force us to face ourselves more and more and more. Life is rigged, friends. And it is going to force us to look at ourselves and to examine what we are not so that we can become what we already are. Conscious beings working out our destiny in cooperation with infinite intelligence. And the patterns reflected in our karmic state find avenues of attraction. When does the soul enter the body? Obviously, re-entry is between the moment of conception and the time of birth. There are many statements and theories on the actual time, and I frankly don't know for certain, although I have what I think is a good idea. And it would be pure speculation, so I won't tell you when that is. But it's not really important, because we did come into the body sometime between conception and birth. It's only important if you are concerned about abortion. And that leads to the next question, which will be the first question, next lesson. What is the purpose of this cycle of being out of the body? It's to prepare us for a new experience upon the earth, a new season of learning and growing and discovering. And from the prophet, Lazar Braun, fare you well, people of Orphalese. This day has ended this life. A day is but a life. A life is but a day. It is closing upon us, even as the water lily upon its own tomorrow. What was given us here we shall keep. And if it suffices not, then again must we come together and together stretch our hands unto the giver. If in this lifetime and the ones that preceded it, if we have not achieved or accomplished or gained enough in consciousness and wisdom and understanding and love to know who and what we are so that we can think and feel from the highest identity. Then we will come again and stretch our hands unto the giver. Forget not that I shall come back to you a little while, and my longing shall gather dust and foam for another body. A little while, a moment of rest upon the wind, and another woman shall bear me. So it is. That is reincarnation.